calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends. The George W. Bush Song and Dance, Dog and Pony Show, Snake Oil Medicine Program on the road last night. We will have clips from that program for you shortly. Still working on mixing them down from another show that I just did. However, before that, where's my volume control here? There we go. Before that, the Denver 3. The Denver 3, they got nailed, they thought, by the Secret Service. Can you imagine? You think the Secret Service is out to get you. By the way, Bernie Sanders is not able to be with us today. He has a dentist's appointment. I don't know if you're supposed to reveal all that kind of stuff, but anyhow, he was very bummed out about it and wants to pass along his very best and his apologies, and he will be back here next week. But no fun. No fun. No, you don't want to hear drill noises. Anyhow, welcome back to our program. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you do want to call about any topic. However, we have with us Alex, who is with the Denver 3, the notorious Denver 3, one of the folks who got busted by the Secret Service agent. Alex, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks a lot, Tom. Sorry it's been a hard time getting a hold of me today.
No, it's no problem. In fact, it's been a strange transition here. We just learned not more than 2 minutes ago that Bernie wasn't with us, and the paper that I have, which has, like, your last name and all that kind of stuff, I don't have in front of me. I only have your first name here on my call screening thing. So give us your last name, Alex.
Yeah, Tom, that's Alex Young.
There we go, Alex Young. Ah, Louise just handed it to me. Thank you. Thank you very much. And here you were in Denver. And you were dressed reasonably well. You weren't carrying protest signs. You didn't have a bullhorn concealed in a large lady's purse or something.
Right.
And you wanted to do what every American citizen should have the absolute right to do, which is to go hear the President of the United States, your president, my president, our president, the guy who, well, he's sitting there. Whether he was elected or not is a whole other issue, but that's for another show. Anyhow, you wanted to go hear your president explain to we the people, the citizens, about our future retirement programs. Is that a fair description?
That is fair. And personally, I wanted to participate in a dialogue. This had been sold as a town hall meeting, a conversation on saving Social Security. And I have very, very different viewpoints than the president does. And I think that, you know, in America and a democracy, that we should have all voices at the table. You know, if questions are asked about Social Security, I'd like to be one of the people that has an opportunity to raise that kind of a question.
Yeah. And the Republicans had a different point of view. Now, it seems increasingly that what is happening is that the way that this country is being run is very similar to the way that the KGB and the Communist Party ran the Soviet Union back in the bad old days. And that is that if you weren't a party member, you couldn't get a decent job, you couldn't get promoted in government, you couldn't get an overseas assignment. But if you were a party member, then all doors were open. And so, first question, Alex Young, one of the Denver Three, if you weren't a member of the Republican Party, how did you get invited to this thing in the first place?
Well, there was a very transparent process for ticketing at this event. I discovered that there were tickets for the president's conversation, and a couple of days before the event, there was an email distributed through Congressman Bob Beaupre's email list that was forwarded to me.
He's a Republican.
He is a Republican.
So the Democratic member of Congress from your area was not able to give out tickets to the president's event?
That's right. Ticketing was done exclusively through Bob Beaupre's office.
Single-party rule only.
That's right. But the one thing about the ticketing that was really good is that the fact that anyone could come and get a ticket, that
yeah.
All you had to have was a Colorado identification. And I gave them my identification, and they gave me a ticket.
Like your driver's license sort of thing.
That's right.
Yeah, and they gave you a ticket. So here you are. You're standing in line. You're ready to go in. Well, you actually got in, didn't you?
That's right. I got in and I sat down. My friends arrived, and as we were waiting, someone came up, a mystery man, we still don't know his name, came up and asked me to stand up and started pushing and shoving me into the door. And
physically pushing you?
Physically pushing me, that's right. And he would not tell me his name. He wouldn't tell me what was happening.
Describe this guy.
He's a guy about 5'11". I would say he was in his 30s. Very close cropped hair, possibly to the extent that he was bald. But I remember that he had very dark, close cut hair, and he was wearing a dark suit. He had a lapel pin on and an earpiece.
Now the Secret Service identify themselves with little red lapel pins. That's how you know the Secret Service guys at any event in general.
Right.
And this guy was wearing and they wear black suits, the men in black, right? And so this guy was wearing a black suit and he had an orange or a red lapel pin. And
that's right.
And the Secret Service guys all have one of those little things in their ear. And it's not a Roto-Rooter earwax remover, it's so they can communicate to each other. So you thought the guy was Secret Service. Had anybody said anything that might cause you to actually believe that this guy was Secret Service? Did he say anything? Did somebody else say something to you?
Well, yeah. My friends Les and Karen were pulled aside as we were going in, and they were told to wait here for Secret Service.
Mm-hmm.
And then this person immediately appeared and started ordering them in a lawful manner. He started saying, wait here. I'm sorry, he didn't say wait here, but the other person said wait here for Secret Service. And then he started saying...
And then the guy in black shows up with the pin and the earpiece.
And he said, if you try to pull anything, you'll be arrested and jailed. And he said that three times. So that was quite disturbing that they represented this person as Secret Service. And then when I asked him who he was and where we were going, he wouldn't answer my questions.
I think it's time to tell one of my favorite stories from the Cold War era, Alex Young. Alex Young, one of the Denver Three. This is something that so many of the people who listen to this program are not old enough to remember Nikita Khrushchev, and certainly not old enough to remember Joseph Stalin. Joseph Stalin was a bloodthirsty maniac, killed 20 million people at least during his reign. But the thing that he's probably most infamous for within Russia is that anyone who disagreed with him, he would kill. Sometimes he actually physically had people assassinated, but very often he simply had them removed from government, and all of a sudden they found themselves with a job as dog catcher, garbage collector, or for often a re-education camp in Siberia. And Stalin was a firm believer in single-party rule. And when Stalin fell, when Stalin died, actually, and the secession process had gone on, and Khrushchev was in the Kremlin, It had become fashionable to actually criticize Stalin. They were modernizing the Soviet Union. They were coming out of this era of repression. Because everybody knew. It was an open secret in the Soviet Union. If you spoke out against Stalin, even in the local bar, you might be dead the next morning, or you certainly wouldn't ever get to participate in anything. And so Khrushchev's up in front of the Politburo, and I was actually told this story. I was in Kaliningrad, Russia, back about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, something like that. And it was the day, in fact, of the first elections when Zhirinovsky was running against Yeltsin. And because I watched that on TV in Russia, in Russian. And a Russian told me this story. And it's one of those stories like, you know, we all have Ronald Reagan stories or Bill Clinton stories or whatever. This is the story that the Russians tell about what's his name. And so here is Khrushchev. He's up in front of the Politburo, and he's criticizing Stalin. And he says, Stalin, he was terrible. He shouldn't. Who could put up with it? And, of course, Khrushchev had been in the Politburo when Stalin was in charge of the country. And so somebody in the back of the Politburo, here's like a big room of about 1,000 people, and somebody in the back, and they're all elected officials, somebody in the back yells, why didn't you say this when Stalin was standing up there? And Khrushchev, there's this like long silence. And Khrushchev looks around the room and he says, in a relatively reasonable tone of voice, he says, who said that? And there's just absolute silence. And then he leans forward and he says, who said that? And there's absolute silence. And then he pounds his fist on the table. He says, who said that? And now you can just, the terror in the room. People just panic-stricken. And then he leans forward and he smiles and he says, and he points his finger in the general direction where he heard the sound, and he said, now you know why I didn't speak up when Stalin was up here.
Mm.
And we are at that point right now in the United States. People are afraid to speak up. People in the Republican Party are afraid to speak up. People in the Democratic Party are just starting to get a spine and speak up and stand up to this guy. But look at what happens when they do. Look at what happened to Tom Daschle. All the wealth and power of the Republican Party comes and falls on their head. People, individual citizens are occasionally speaking up, but look at what happened to Joe Wilson. His wife gets outed. It's a crime. It's treason. It's a federal felony. And individuals are starting to speak up. But where? How? You go to one of these events, and what happens is what happened to you, Alex Young. They drag you off. Pardon my long rant there, but are you starting to see parallels? I don't know if you're old enough to remember Nikita Khrushchev. If you are, do you see parallels here? Alex Young? Oh, Alex has vanished. I guess my rant went too long. What happened, Louis? Oh, when I pounded the table, I must have banged him off the air. Ah, well. So anyhow, that's my point. I think that that's where we're at. I think that's absolutely where we're at. And while Louise is getting Alex back on the line, let's take a few phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894 telephone number. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the line. Boy, don't pound the table in a radio studio, Rick.
What's that?
I says, bang on the table and it drops the phone lines.
Yeah, I heard that story you told about Khrushchev. I heard it slightly different. And, you know, we don't know if that's apocryphal, but I think it makes the point.
Yeah.
And
I can tell you it's widespread in Russia. They love to tell that story.
It probably is true, at least in some form. But I wanted to talk about something a little more close to home. You know, the way things are going in this country now, of course, we've got the federal government with, what is it, something like $7 trillion?
Yep. We just lost him as well. Louise, the phone system is croaked. Don't bother getting Alex on. We've got to reboot the phone system because this has happened before. I'm going to try Coach Glenn and let's see if we can hang on to him. I think what's happened is the phone system is dying here. It's dropping lines. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Glenn, let's see how long we can hang on to you.
Ouch. I would let go.
Ouch.
Oh. Okay. You know we're hypersensitive when we're ADHD.
Okay.
Anyway, I was amazed that people, on the speech last night, people are not, the reporters are not doing their job.
Yeah.
On the analysis on Nightline, one reporter pointed out the obvious fact that really what he's talking about is a $3 trillion cut in benefits to solve the problem by lowering the benefits
and
for the
$5 trillion in borrowing to put forth his personal accounts, his privatization.
Right, and then the link between that and the fact that corporations have now moved hundreds of billions of tax liability offshore so they avoid paying those taxes and the rest of us make it up, plus he cut taxes for the wealthy. And
and he wants to do it again.
And that's more than enough to make up for that shortfall.
That's,
you know,
right.
The money was there in the trust fund. He just raided it.
Yeah, well, the money is still there in the trust fund. He raided it and spent it, and there's these IOUs now, and he doesn't want to have to be the guy to pay it back. In fact, I doubt anybody does.
Right.
And it's a problem, but it's not a problem that can't be solved fairly easily. If we had simply not done the Bush tax cuts for the rich, that money alone would have solved the Social Security problem. Coach Glenn, thanks a lot for the call. I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And we have some clips here on Social Security. We'll get to those probably after the bottom of the hour. We still have some phone calls. We got back with Alex, and apparently he was on a cell phone, and he thinks it was his phone that dropped. So my concern. So apparently it wasn't Alberto Gonzalez or the ghost of John Ashcroft, and it wasn't the flaky phone system, although it's still a little spooky having dropped two callers at once. Lynn in Eureka is on the line. Hey, Lynn, thanks for calling 8669, whatever the number is there, 889-8894.
Listen, I'm calling because I keep hearing talk radio folks keep talking about how Medicare is actually in worse shape than Social Security.
Medicare went officially bankrupt. Not bankrupt, but they went into the... This is Bush's definition of bankrupt. They started spending more money than they're bringing in 7 months ago.
Well, my point is that they keep saying, well, why doesn't he do something about that? And I would like to submit that he has done something about that with the prescription drug plan. He has taken care of it pretty well. I think that's part of what bankrupted it.
Yes, absolutely. That is what bankrupted it, and it's going to get far worse in a year or two. And the next president of the United States is going to have a huge mess on his hands with Medicare. And Social Security is going to look like a picnic. And this is part of the Bush plan.
Yeah.
Set it up for failure so
right.
that the next president, somebody's going to have to pull the plug on it, or they're going to have to increase taxes. And they've made it so unpalatable to increase taxes in the United States that they're betting that everybody will be terrified of doing that.
Yeah, see, that's my point, is that he has taken care of Medicare. His plan is in effect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well said, Lynn. Thanks a lot for the call. Thanks for weighing in on it. Rick in Grand Rapids on the line. Hey, Rick.
Yeah, I guess I got cut off there.
Yeah, you did, and my apologies. I'm not sure.
Well, I don't know what happened. I was wondering if something I did.
Say hi to Alberto Gonzalez.
Tom DeLay, who knows.
Yeah.
But anyway, to get back to my point here, as we know, the federal government is actually bankrupt. They're still printing money or whatever. Our state here, Michigan, has the worst economy of all 50 states. And here in Grand Rapids, we're having a real budget crisis. And see, the problem is the Republicans have this mantra of, well, you know, the government that's closest to you should actually do the taxation and the funding. So if the feds can't help you out, if the state can't help you out, the cities will have to actually help you out. Well, guess what? Here in Grand Rapids, we got a scenario where they're talking about closing our city parks, not cutting the grass, not watering the lawns, not keeping the restrooms open, closing all
And again,
of our-
all of this goes back to insane conservative economic policies, particularly the insane conservative, the voodoo economics, the insane conservative international trade policies that are wiping out our industrial base, wiping out our infrastructure, and now even wiping out our information systems base. You can go to work, you can go to school and get a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, a PhD in computer science, and Bill Gates still is out there lobbying Congress day before yesterday to get rid of the H-1B visa program so he can bring in people from India for $20,000 a year to do a job that it used to take, you know, with people with a master's degree for $20,000 a year. To do a job that it used to cost him $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 for. I mean, doesn't he have enough billions?
Well, I agree with that, but I guess my problem is here in Grand Rapids, we got seven city commissioners, including a mayor who's essentially a commissioner at large. He's not a strong mayor, and I would think all but one of them would probably be Democrats, and they just don't have the guts to raise taxes. They're saying we can't do that, but yet. What they seem to forget is that when you're running a government like that, it's like a double-entry bookkeeping system. If you don't raise taxes, you cut services. Now, doesn't that hurt citizens?
Right, and then you end up with a lousy quality of life in your community, and who wants that?
Well, they're talking about Grand Rapids being a cool city, and, you know, we've got the Amway folks here, and they've done a lot to build up the city, you know, not altruistically, of course.
Oh, my cousin worked for Amway for years. It's a decent company.
They have done good things for the city, but the way it looks now... as if they just want to basically privatize everything. They're actually asking the citizens to pool their resources to do certain parks activities, and they're.
But that's called government. That's the citizens pooling their resources, Rick. That's the definition of government.
But they've abdicated their responsibility here.
It's time to start holding them accountable. Then it's time to start showing up at the meetings. Time to start running for office. Take names.
I'm doing both.
You're doing both. Good. Congratulations. Good on you, Rick. I got to move along. Thanks for the call, though. Thanks for sharing that with us. That is so important. We have activists all over the country listening to this program. Who are getting politically involved. God bless you. It's so great. 29 minutes past the hour. Everyone.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Live on lots of money.
Yeah, money. We're going to get into that. I've got the clips now here from George W. Bush's speech last night. I want to deconstruct that over the next 3 hours here on the program. And we have Alex back with us here also. Alex, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tom, I'm really sorry about that. I'm having some terrible phone problems today. So.
Gee, I wonder if it could have anything to do with the Bush White House being unhappy with you.
Well, I hope that's not the case. So anyway.
Let us not be paranoid here. So anyhow, so they came and they hauled you out. Now, the bottom line is you're trying to find out who this guy is so that you can sue him because he violated your rights.
That's not really the point. The point is that we're trying to make sure that this pattern of abuse has happened here and in Arizona and in New Hampshire and in Oregon. And who knows where else, where people are afraid to speak up about it. We're trying to prevent this from happening again. And to that extent, yeah, I mean, I'll do whatever it takes.
Well, that's what lawsuits are for. I mean, the whole thing, the reason why Ralph Nader was suing the auto companies back in the 60s wasn't because he wanted to get rich. It was because he wanted them to realize that there would be economic consequences or legal consequences to breaking the law, to doing things that harmed humans. And in this case, doing things that harm democracy of the United States.
This is terribly un-American, and the only way that they're going to get away with this is if they suppress people's voices in the media. And, to that extent, the White House is trying their best to do that. But
well, they own the media,
Yeah, we're going to fight back, and ultimately we will find out who this person was and who trained and employed him. And right now all fingers are pointing at the administration. The administration remains silent on it. They call the person a volunteer while their own Secret Service says that he was a host Republican staffer, and I think that's just it's damning. It really is.
Yeah. Alex, John in Dallas is on the line. He has a question for you. Can we pop a question?
Absolutely.
Okay, here you go. John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to see that Alex is back also. I've got a big question about Social Security and the way that Bush is pushing for it. And one of the big questions is not being asked or even answered is, why is he doing this? Okay, Bush has never shown that he cares at all about the lower class or the middle class. Look at the a bankruptcy law, repealing estate tax, the budget that he's got in and everything. My understanding is that when Social Security was put in 1937, not a single Republican voted for it.
Not one. And, in fact, Priscilla Owen, one of the judges, the judge that Bill Frist featured in Justice Sunday, has said that 1937 was when the Socialist Revolution happened in the United States, and she would probably vote to roll. Is it Priscilla Owen? Perhaps I'm mixing her up with Janice Brown.
No, Priscilla Owen. She's the one.
The Socialist Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And let's let you know, Social Security is unconstitutional. So Alex was at a Social Security gig. And so, Dan, you have a question. Alex, what do you think? John, you have a question. Alex.
Okay. The question that I have is that the only thing that I can see where Bush would really be pushing for this is that, if the private accounts are set up, it's not that there's going to be, the Wall Street dealers are going to make money. Yeah, they'll make money, but I don't think that's it. But if you look at it, what's it going to do? In the first 10 years, it's going to pour $10 trillion into the stock market. Well, what does that do? The stock market has a finite number of stocks, supply and demand. What that's really going to do is it's going to really raise the price of the stocks.
Right, so the investor class.
4% friends. Yes.
That's right.
And I think that's what is being that's why Bush is going through all of this. But nobody's asking that question or holding him accountable to that. What do you guys think?
Well, I agree with you, Dan. John, excuse me. I've got to say, I think that there's layers of benefit to the Bushies, layers within layers of this. Although, frankly, I doubt that they're thinking specifically in those terms. I think that probably there's a more general just philosophy. Hey, if a corporation does it, it's good. If government does it, it's bad. Mm-hmm. But, Alex, what's your take on that?
Well, yeah, I think it's just another way that the administration's trying to privatize everything. I mean, they're going from Social Security to our clean skies to oil and now free speech. I mean, they're privatizing everything, and they believe that every person that has $1 billion in a bank account should have an equal voice in America. And I think that's wrong. It's just incredibly wrong.
Yeah. Well said. John, thanks for the call. Alex, we need to wrap this up. What can people do? How can they learn more about it? How can they support you in what you're doing?
Well, go to denver3.org. That's spelled out denverthree.org. And we have all kinds of media accounts of it, some interesting analysis from different people, and ways you can support us in terms of a free speech fund. We've established a free speech fund because any legal action we take is going to cost a
right.
Quite-
and the other thing that people can do is they can start asking their elected representatives, what is going on with the Denver 3? Call your
Absolutely.
Call your local elected representative, or call your national, your federal elected representatives. The telephone number for the House of Representatives and the Senate is 1-877-SOB-USOB. The letter U. SOB, the letter U, SOB. That will get you to the White House or the Capitol switchboard, and you can ask for your member of the Senate, your member of the House of Representatives. You can even ask for the President and Vice President if you want. So give them a call. Alex, thanks so much for being with us, and we'll continue to encourage people to go to denver3.org.
Well, thanks very much, Tom, and you guys have a great day.
Thanks, you too. It's 1-866-889-8894, the telephone number here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. David in Asheville, North Carolina on the line. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Well, when Bush's lips started moving last night, you know, there are certain whoppers I come to expect from
yeah,
him.
When his lips start moving. Okay.
You know, the Treasury bonds going from stable investment to worthless IOUs in about two breaths. But the one that really got to me was when he called us all lazy last night. I don't know if you remember, he was asked,
I didn't catch that.
He was asked about his sagging, you know, popularity in the polls, and he explained it away by saying that it was his novel new policies, and basically all the Americans that balk at the hard work. That was his quote, balking at the hard work.
Oh, my. I wish I had caught that. What I do have here, the bank account thing, here's George W. Bush. Well, hang on just a second. Let me turn this on.
Now, it's very important for our fellow citizens to understand there is there's not a bank account here in Washington, D.C., where we take your payroll taxes and hold it for you.
Actually, there is. The Social Security account has to have administration, has to have a bank account in order to write a check.
And then give it back to you when you retire. Our system here is called pay as you go.
But now, there he's making a good point, with the exception being the Social Security Trust Fund. I don't think anybody has sat this guy and explained to him, sat him down and explained to him, that back in 82, during the Reagan administration, they realized that when the baby boomers retired, there was going to be a problem. There was this rabbit going through the python thing. There was this bulge coming. It would go away, too. But there was going to be a temporary problem. It was going to last about 30 or 40 years, and we need to start saving up for it. They raised Social Security taxes from around 8% to around 11.5%, and all that extra money. Pardon?
Reagan set that up.
Yeah, exactly. Reagan set this thing up. It was, you know, Alan Greenspan was on the commission, as was Daniel Patrick Moynihan, and all that extra money has been held in a separate account. Now, the federal government has been, under the Bush administration, under the Reagan administration, and under the other Bush administration, and even during the first few years of the Clinton administration, the federal government has been borrowing from that fund, but they, when they borrow, they give it treasury bills. They give it treasuries back. But anyhow, here's Bush's take on it.
You pay into the system through your payroll taxes, and the government spends it.
In theory, with real Social Security, yeah, regular Social Security before the payroll trust fund, yes. Only it wasn't the government spends it, it was the government pays Social Security benefits. What he's saying is that he spends it. He's been raiding this trust fund.
It spends the money on the current retirees, and with the money left over, it funds other government programs. And all that's left behind
shouldn't.
Is file cabinets full of IOUs.
Those IOUs. Just a bunch of IOUs. They're no good at all. But then later on in his own speech, he says, Treasury bills backed by the full faith and confidence of the United States government. I mean, how much of this...
Right. He said people that, you know, don't want to take a risk on the stock market can buy Treasury bonds, which are stable and... You know, and a few sentences later, he had said they're just worthless IOUs.
Right.
I mean,
it's
have it both ways.
Absolute nonsense. David, thanks a lot for the call. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Tariq in Missouri is on the line. Hey, Tariq.
Hey, I just had a couple questions and a couple statements. I just never understood when they went over and they spent putting in Treasury bonds the money from Social Security. I thought Treasury bonds, just like any other bonds, is where you take that money and you invest it back in your infrastructure, to increase your country, to increase the roads and our lights and our power lines and everything else, So well, you get more efficient, so your country gets better.
Well, actually, like if you go back to World War II or after World War II, that was very much the case. I remember when I was a kid in the 1950s in school, you could put dimes in, you know, to buy savings bonds to rebuild America. And that savings bonds and treasury bonds are basically the government borrowing money. How the government uses that money is the big variable. What you're suggesting is that whenever the government borrows money, it uses it to build infrastructure. Unfortunately, that's not true. George W. Bush has been borrowing money in order to give tax breaks to his wealthy friends. Virtually all of the money that has been borrowed has either gone to Bush's wealthiest buddies, the millionaires and billionaires among us, or to pay for the Iraq War. If you combine those two things, you have all of the tax, you have all of the deficit, all of the money that we're borrowing. Now, historically, you know, during the Eisenhower administration, during the Kennedy administration, during the early years of the Johnson administration, what government borrowing was going on to fund infrastructure. And that's how local communities do it. You want to build a new water system, a new septic system, new sewer system, whatever. You float a bond. You borrow the money. But the federal government has been borrowing money for operating expenses. And now, under Bush, they're doing the same thing they did under Reagan, which is this insane voodoo economics, which is borrow from the people, or borrow from, actually, from China, increasingly, and Saudi Arabia. And then use that money to give it and call it tax cuts and give it to the most wealthy among us. That's the answer.
So wouldn't if you wanted to kind of help Social Security, wouldn't reinvesting that money back in our infrastructure so we could keep more jobs here, pay people to actually build up our infrastructure so we're putting more back in Social Security, putting back in our economy, and also taking our ability to transport and move goods more efficiently and taking that money, wouldn't that build our country enough to help bring more money back into Social Security, so Social Security would be able to refund itself?
Tariq, you're making sense. You must be a liberal. You're absolutely right. It's the same reason why if there was simply a $2 increase in the minimum wage, there would be no more Social Security problem, because so much of the Social Security fund is paid for by people who are earning minimum wage or slightly above, that if you simply raise the minimum wage $2, that would solve the problem. And like you said, if we rebuild our infrastructure, if we had public transportation, you would see such an economic boom in the United States, you wouldn't have a problem with Social Security, because in 82, when they fixed it on the assumption that we were going to have a good economy. They didn't realize that George W. Bush was going to come in, institute voodoo economics, and crash the economy. They didn't realize that his father would have done the same thing, or for that matter, that Reagan would have done it. This was back in 82, when they were just starting to figure out how insane the conservatives were. So that's the answer. Tariq, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You make great sense. Good to hear from you. Eric in Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Tom. How you doing today?
Great. What's up?
I just want to know why nobody's talking about the employer side of Social Security and what that's going to do for the Walmarts of the country as far as basically pulling that burden off of them as well.
Well, my understanding is that they're not talking about reducing the employer contribution. Are they? Am I missing something?
I don't know. I mean, it's not really a topic of conversation.
Yeah, I think it's not a topic of...
I'm wondering if that's part of it.
No, I don't think so. I think that you're absolutely right that the Social Security, whatever taxes you pay in Social Security are matched by your employer. So from an employer's point of view, Social Security is an expense on top of payroll.
Correct.
And if Bush has his privatization, private accounts, then some of the money, whether it's the money that you're paying or the money your employer's paying, some of that total money will go into private accounts, and we'll have to borrow trillions of dollars to make up the deficit, or we'll have to raise Social Security taxes, which presumably would mean raising the tax on the employer as well as the employee. In fact, I believe that the way the law is written, it's always split 50-50, so any increase or any decrease is going to affect the employer the same way. So I think basically it's kind of a neutral thing, and that's probably why you're not hearing about it.
Gotcha.
Okay. Got to move along, Eric. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Dan in Rockford, Illinois. Dan?
Yeah, that's it.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, I was just thinking, since we were making comparisons between the Soviet Union and Bush's police, perhaps we could also make the comparison that anyone who makes under $100,000 is a useful idiot for corporate America.
Well, I would say anybody who makes under $1 million probably is a useful idiot.
And votes for Bush is a useful idiot.
Well, here now, Bush is proposing. This is his proposal, was that those who are not... this is from the Los Angeles Times News Analysis, and this is just a straight news story. This isn't an op-ed piece, right? L.A. Times. For instance, those who are now 17 years old and earn average wages all their working lives would receive Social Security benefits 20% lower than what they could expect under current law when they retire at 60. 67 in 2055. The average annual wage is $36,000. People who earn somewhat more than that in their working years, the equivalent of $59,000 this year, would see a 30% reduction. People who earn $90,000 a year would see a 40% reduction in Social Security benefits when they retire in 2055. Bush is no friend of the middle class.
Correct. But it's funny, that whole phrase, we've heard that phrase, you know, that the Russians, that Lenin said that the leftists and the communists in America were useful idiots. But in fact, Lenin never said that. The first recorded use of that phrase, useful idiots, was from a John Birch Society pamphlet, which was accusing Ronald Reagan of being a useful idiot for some agreement that he had made with the Soviet Union at that time.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Thanks for that little tidbit of history. I collect those. Thanks, Dan.
Take care.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Just a minute, we're going to go to a break. Let's hear from Bush first.
These changes have put Social Security on the path to bankruptcy. When the baby boomers start retiring in 3 years, Social Security will start heading toward the red. In 2017, the system will start paying out more in benefits than it collects in payroll taxes.
And that's how it's designed, you idiot! That's how it's designed! It's supposed to do that! That's why we have the Social Security Trust Fund. That's why in 82 we started accumulating an excess of money. For 30 years, we're going to have an excess of money. We're going to put it into the trust fund, which is now, as you say, all IOUs. The government's going to have to pay it back, and they don't want to do that. But nonetheless, it's there. Those treasury bonds are there. Those treasury bills are there. And that money will be paid to the baby boomers when they retire, and when the baby boomers are all dead, we'll go back to pay as you go, because the baby boomers are the rabbit moving through the python. They're an abnormality, and when they're gone, it's over, and then Social Security is back to being normal. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Some say they go into a place called glory, and I ain't saying it ain't a fact.
And welcome back, my friends.
I'm on the road to purgatory, and I don't like the sound of that.
Neither would I. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Rich in Chicago on the line. Hey, Rich.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
Oh, no. Thank you. I appreciate the discussion as well. You know, this is like a hostile corporate takeover where a few people dismantle something and reap the benefits from it, you know, and hurting all the rest of the people involved. But
and isn't it ironic that they're, or isn't it interesting, that they're all corporate CEOs, Cheney and Bush, and they said that they were going to run the CEO government. Well, here we are.
Absolutely, and you see a lot of board of directors trying to get rid of pension plans. You know, this used to be, you know, three legs of a stool that we had: Social Security plus some sort of severance package or some sort of retirement package from a corporation that used to supply that, and then we had our own personal accounts that we saved for retirement.
Right.
And they're really trying to take these away. But here's something that I don't understand. I have many insurance policies just like you do. My business, I'm also a pilot, a helicopter pilot. I've got aviation insurance. I've got auto insurance. I've got my family's insurance. I pay in a lot of money for all these. And at the end of it, if I don't need those insurances, I don't get any money back.
And you're pleased
security.
For that, right?
What's
and,
that? Yeah.
And you're happy. I mean, it's much better not to get back insurance money.
Exactly. But in this deal, this is the best deal. If I give you $100 today, even though because of inflation, it's devalued, but 30 years later you give it back to me, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's the best deal out there. So I don't understand why anybody describes that part of the
deal.
Well,
Bush wants to take it apart for two reasons, and they're very straightforward reasons. Number one, he thinks it's socialism and it never should have been passed. 1937, Social Security was passed without one single Republican vote. A year later was the first time the Republicans tried to unvote it. Right? So there have been a number of Republican attacks on Social Security over the years. And now they're trying to stack the Supreme Court so they can take apart Social Security. That's number one. And number two, they want their buddies in Wall Street to get the money.
Well, it's all about greed. But you know what's also is curious to me is I have friends who consider themselves Republican or, you know, agree with that socialist model that you're describing here. But, you know, their fathers had died, and they were raised on Social Security. And I don't understand why they... how they still back that idea when if they
it's
didn't
because they've
it.
Been listening to too much right wing talk radio.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just the bottom line is the ideology ideology trumps sanity so very, very often. Rich, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. We have some more callers. We'll pick them up on the other side of the break here. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, the place where smart people get their news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the radio support group of By and For We the People to Viagra for your brain. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's just hear this little clip with Georgie. One more time. It is so outrageous that he would have the audacity to say this. This is absolutely mind-boggling. Here, George W. Bush last night.
These changes have put Social Security on the path to bankruptcy. When the baby boomers start retiring in 3 years, Social Security will start heading toward the red. In 2017, the system will start paying out more in benefits than it collects in payroll taxes.
Okay, now, first of all, with Medicare, it has started paying out more in benefits than it collects in payroll taxes, so there's already a crisis with Medicare. On the other hand, with Social Security, in 2017, when it starts paying out more than it collects, and 2017 is a ways down the road, George, but nonetheless, when it starts paying out more than it collects, that's what it's supposed to do. That's why we created a savings account called the Social Security Trust Fund to provide for people during that period of time when there will be more people taking benefits from, you know, two to one rather than 16 to one. It's going to go back to 16 to one when all the baby boomers die off. It's a demographic bulge that is not normal. Apparently, nobody sat George down and said, George, there's this thing called the Social Security Trust Fund, and it's saving for the baby boomers, and that's why it's there. Apparently, nobody's bothered to tell him that. Anyhow, he continues.
Every year after that, the shortfall will get worse, and by 2041, Social Security will be bankrupt.
And that is a flat-out lie. Just a plain old flat-out lie. By 2041, the Social Security Trust Fund will be out of money. And that's how it's supposed to be. Actually, it's not supposed to run out of money until about 2060, 65, something like that, when the last of the baby boomers drop dead. But that's how it's supposed to work, George. And then the Social Security program goes back to pay-as-you-go, the way it was before the baby boomers, assuming there are no more demographic bulges. And there haven't been. In fact, to some extent, there's been the reverse. But that's a little too complicated for George W. Bush. Dale in Alabama on the line. Hey, Dale, thanks for calling the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions about some of the things that you guys have been talking about on your show.
Okay.
And one thing that y'all were talking about is Social Security. And me personally, I'm just totally against it. I mean...
You're against what?
George Bush's Social Security privatization proposal.
Okay.
And, It's un-American. I mean, it really is. Because here's the deal. You know, you get a Social Security card when practically when you're born. You get a birth certificate. You pay taxes until the day you die. I mean, hell, you pay taxes after you're dead. And my point is, everybody pays into Social Security. And the beauty of it is, if you make $10 million a year, you still pay into it along with a guy that works at McDonald's that makes $5.15 an hour.
But you're not. If you're making $10 million, first of all, you don't pay after you're dead unless you're one of the 7,000 families in America who makes more than $10 million a year. There's about 3,000 families in America who are paying estate taxes. And secondly, You said the millionaire is paying the same as the guy who works at McDonald's. The guy who's working at McDonald's is paying 11.2% of his income into Social Security taxes. The millionaire is paying less than 1% of his income into Social Security taxes, because you only pay Social Security tax on the first $80,000 that you earn. After that, you don't have to pay the tax anymore. So if you make $200,000 a year, you don't pay a tax on that second $100,000. We need a flat tax. If we said, okay, it's a flat tax, we'll go along with Steve Forbes. Flat tax for Social Security, even though it's regressive, just a flat tax. Let Bill Gates pay the same percentage that I pay and that you pay. Then at least, the number one, the Social Security system would be solvent. And number two, you could argue it might be a little fairer, Dale.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. But I guess my point was, as far as Social Security goes, up until that first $80,000, everybody pays the same. That's pretty much the beauty of the system. And it's not, I mean, life is not fair, but it's fair up until that $80,000.
Right.
Now, as for a flat tax, I've always advocated for it. And you're absolutely right. I would love to see it. Personally, I don't think it would ever happen.
I'm talking about a flat tax for Social Security, just on FICA, just in Social Security. Make it a flat tax. Make the millionaires and billionaires pay the same percentage that working guys like you and me pay.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, there's a couple other things that I wanted to talk about, and that is, you know, why is it that, you know, we're continuing to fight the war in Iraq? We don't really have an exit strategy yet. Of course, we don't know what's going on, but yet we're still not making plans to, at some point, get out. And ultimately, we could be setting ourselves up for a Vietnam type of
could be.
Escalation.
We've been in one for a year and a half.
And the other thing is, you know, we're all worried about what I love. This is what I love. The conservative people say is, well, you know what? Iraq had it. They gave it to Syria. Syria has it. They just got it hidden. Well, you know what? North Korea isn't exactly hiding its nuclear missiles.
No,
I mean,
they're not.
They're like, hey, we got it, and we'll use it. Now,
I agree with you, Dale. And not only that, there was the survey group just announced day before yesterday that for sure Syria has nothing. They got nothing. They got nothing from Iraq. They got nothing from Iraq when Saddam was in. They got nothing from Iraq after Saddam fell. They got nothing.
Well, you know,
officially announced, the U.S. government.
You know, the funny thing about all this is, you know, George Bush, he graduated from Yale with a history degree. If he didn't graduate from Yale, he graduated from an Ivy League school. So my point is, he studied history. Everybody knows.
Well, somebody studied history. Here's the thing, Dale. Somebody studied history and signed their name to the tests as George W. Bush. I don't believe it was George W. Bush. I'm serious. You know, those folks who have been to universities where you get, you know, some rich folks in there, you get it, that there are people who make their way through school and never do the work because they can afford to pay a couple $1,000 a year to have somebody do the work for them. And there's no doubt in my mind that George W. Bush is one of those people, because he is ignorant about American history. There's no way that guy could have actually been taking the tests and reading the books when he was studying history. No way. No bloody way.
Well, you know, I mean, I really don't want to get into the merits of that. I mean, I at least want to give, you know, he got the degree. I want to give him credit for it. I mean, I don't want to.
I don't believe for a minute that guy actually earned a history degree. He is so ignorant of history. It is inconceivable to me that he actually showed up and paid attention.
Well, I mean, you're probably right to some of that. But
I mean, we just saw this with one of the Walton family heirs, this daughter of one of the Walton billionaires, and she was paying $20,000 a year to her roommate to take all her tests for her, and she had graduated. She graduated with an A average. She never showed up in class, and she never took the tests. Her roommate did it all for her under her name.
Yeah, but how? I mean, see, that's...
She has a wing in the school named after her, just like Bush. I mean, you know, Bush's daddy giving money to Yale to get his son into it. Anyhow, I got to move along, Dale. Dale, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You raised a whole lot of good points, and it's great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Alice in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Alice, what's up?
Well, Tom, I think the people all over the world did not believe a word that Bush spoke last night.
Yeah, I certainly didn't.
Those countries have a free press, and most of our press is owned by a few corporations that may benefit from this Bush craziness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, good point, Alice.
Yeah,
thank
okay.
you for making it. I appreciate
okay.
it. Alice is so well-spoken. She knows her point. She calls up. She says, this is it. And excellent. Diana in Allentown. Hey, Diana, hard act to follow there. Hey, 91-year-old Alice. But you're on, Diana.
How you doing today?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Okay, I think I'm going to give you a different perspective of an undercurrent. And,
okay.
I get this really because I watch C-SPAN, and basically after hours, you know, the midnight to 4 a.m., one of the things that isn't being said here about Social Security, you know, they're going out touting it's your money, invest it in the market, your return, et cetera, et cetera. But Grassley, who's the chairman of the Senate committee, has turned around and said, but when you retire, we want you to put the money into an annuity.
Right. Grassley is quaking in his boots right now, by the way.
And there are a lot of Republicans that are saying this. We want you to put the money into annuity. It'll give you a guaranteed return. Now, I'm in the financial services industry, so I know how, you know, like a lot of different things work. But we got to go back and look historically. The first Reagan administration, it was, we need our IRAs to beef up people's retirements.
Right.
And it started with IRA retirements, buying CDs.
Right.
Second administration, it went into the stock market.
Right.
So what ended up happening after that is fewer and fewer people started, or companies, I should say, started offering defined benefit plans for retirement funds.
Right. What's your point, Diana?
My point is that why the push is for 2017 that people, you know, that they privatize Social Security is they need money to...
In the stock market.
In the stock market to pay the $4 trillion that the people have invested that are going to start retiring in 401ks and IRA plans and everything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, now that makes a lot more sense. That makes a tremendously lot more sense than the conspiracy theory that the investor class wants to get all this money into the stock market because they're concerned that supply and demand and all that, that if they get a lot of money into the market, it'll drive up prices. Really what's going on is they're terrified about the fact that so many people are going to retire and take their money out of the stock market after 2017, and they want there to be an inflow from our children and grandchildren to make up for that so that the market doesn't collapse in 2017 when people start pulling out their 401ks, IRAs, and SEPs.
You got it. And the thing is that the people that are in the 401ks and the IRAs and the KEOs and the SEPs that are invested in the market, when they hit retirement, they pull it out of the market and put into bank CDs.
Right. And then the
so
market
they
starts
need
to
the
fall.
Money. They're looking for the pyramid scheme to come back in and say, hey, young people, we can't let our companies fail. Look at any stock-traded company on the market. They don't have the cash to pay out what they got to pay out.
Right. And the value of the stock is not necessarily a reflection of the value of the corporation. It's a value of supply and demand in the stock market. In fact, you value stocks based on a multiplier. You know, what is it, 20
right.
times earnings, 50 times earnings, assets plus double earnings, whatever. There's a bunch of different ways to calculate it. But
exactly.
It's never, here's what this company is worth, therefore this is what the stock is worth.
And they don't have the assets to sell off to get the cash that they're going to have to pay out.
Right. The only way to do that would be massive bankruptcies, which is probably what is coming down the road. Diana, thanks so much for enlightening us on that and giving me a reminder of something. I had considered that some time ago, and somehow I just kind of went into the dim recesses of the back of my brain. You are so spot on. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Diana.
Thanks.
1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin.
Hey, I figured out it's great ownership society.
Oh, yeah?
All the middle class and the poor own all the debt, and all the rich own the ships.
There you go. You're right. You're absolutely right. That is the Bush agenda.
I know. I want to say something else about Social Security and stock market. If you go back and study history, which Bush obviously bought his.
Armin, I'm going to ask you to hold, and I'm going to take the rest of your comment on the other side of this break, if that's all right with you. Because I have a feeling this isn't a 20-second rant. So hang on here, because we've got to take a break. We've got to pay some bills. And by the way, if you like this program, support our sponsors, the national sponsors, as well as the local sponsors and the radio station that you're listening to. It's 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman here with you on the radio support group of, by, and for We the People.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Here in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman, 25 minutes past the hour. And we were speaking with Armin in Florida. Armin, you were about to make a point.
I want to make a couple more if I can. I've been waiting a long time.
Okay. You know, years, right?
Well, you're so popular, you know.
What's up, Armin?
Listen, man, this guy talks about socialism. He's against it. Look and follow the money behind the equity that the Bush crime family holds, and you'll find, I did, in my opinion, and I think yours too, that the who's benefited more than the Bush crime family economically off of the government spending.
Well, just take one simple example. Look at the Texas Rangers. He owns the Texas Rangers. He wanted to have it increase in value. The way to have it increase in value is to use eminent domain to take away land from people in, was it Dallas or Houston?
Private.
Yeah,
private
to take away private property from taxpayers and then with using the taxpayers' funds build a stadium and let them use that stadium. I mean, it's you talk about socialism.
And then appoint your buddy that helped you facilitate that to the head of the teachers' pension in Texas.
Right.
University.
Right.
They
reward their friends. I mean, we you have to give them that whether it's good or bad. I mean, they very carefully keep the ledgers.
But I mean, they're all about socialism, the Bush crime family. But another thing I want to comment about too is Social Security. Okay, after the 29 crash, the stock market did not come back for more than 25 years, and that was after the massive influx of World War II spending.
Right.
And we've already spent massively before this moron wants to steal it and give it to Wall Street. Now it's just the opposite. So it's not going to help that much because the people, the problem economically I see in this country, and everybody dances around it, but most people are owned that are in the media, so they don't really get to the point because they're afraid of their own job. But if you look at the economics of this country and the leverage of the people in power that have possession of leverage economically that influence the economics of this country, you'll see that there's too high of a degree in disparity between their leverage and the economic leverage of the common people that are being manipulated and displaced. And what that's going to do, we're going to come along a curve here where there's going to be so many fewer people progressing that have so much more
We're already there, Armin. We're already there. I got to tell you, you're absolutely right, and we're already there. The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and there has been a sea change during the last 25 years. Reagan started this snowball rolling down the hill, this juggernaut, and we are there now. The middle class is being wiped out. The wealthy class is coming along saying, the investor class, yes, they own America. They own America. That's the bottom line. Marge, and thanks for your contribution, Armin. Marge in La Puebla. Hey, Marge.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Two things real quickly. You were talking about energy a few days ago. I wanted to point out Amory Lovins, the physicist from the Rocky Mountain Institute.
Mm-hmm.
He talked to the Bioneers last fall in a talk called Winning the Oil End Game, told in great detail, and he does in his book, that in 20 years we can get off of oil completely. Now, this is not a man whose head is in the clouds. He's a physicist. He's worked on energy issues for years. So I recommend that to you and your other listeners.
Well, in fact, after the break, I'm going to share with you the voice of another person who said that we could do exactly that. We could get off the oil cycle within 20 years.
Excuse me, Tom. My point in bringing that up is that I expect GW will raise the fear factor with energy. Oh, we have to use nuclear power plants because we're running out of fuel.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They've already done it. It's a big part of their energy program to expand the insurance for them.
Right.
I mean, this is an industry that couldn't exist if it wasn't for government welfare, if it wasn't for government subsidies, and if it wasn't for laws that now make it illegal for you to sue a nuclear power plant if you're harmed or killed by it. So, speaking of socialism, thanks. Thanks a lot for the call, Mark.
And could I make a second point?
Very quickly.
Naomi Klein has an excellent article in The Nation, Rise of Disaster Capitalism. She points out the creation of the Office of Coordinator for Reconstruction and Stabilization out of the White House. I maintain that's an end run around Congress.
Oh, that's one of many. It's one of absolutely many. Marge, thanks for the call. We got to go to a break. 29 minutes past the hour.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I rode my bicycle past your window last night.
Somehow that sounds like my notion of George W. Welcome back, my friends. 27 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Florian in Illinois. Real quickly, hey, Florian, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I just wanted to throw out something for thought.
Okay.
And I was hoping Bernie would be on. Basically, it goes down to creating a single issue for the 2006 election. And to my mind, the health care issue could very well trip it. If a reasonable plan was proposed for universal coverage, single payer, as Bernie had indicated in the past, you know, monitored or administered by the states.
Right.
The people have, certainly with Social Security, have shown that they're not adverse to social programs.
No, no, not at all. And if, in fact, and we were to take Medicare and make it universal, not only would it be a great thing for the people of the United States, not just the 45 million uninsured, but all the insured who are paying incredible burdens, but it would be a huge benefit to the employers of the United States. It would make them competitive with the employers of every other industrialized country in the world where employers don't have to pay for health care.
Yeah, and the point very definitely is if a plan like that was put out, it has no hope of passing right now. But if the people are aware of it, and come 2006,
we need to start cranking this thing up. I agree with you, Florian. I absolutely agree. Thanks for a lot for the call. I do appreciate it. I also promised before the break here, we're going to do the best of the rest of the news in just a moment. I also promised I would share with you. Last night you heard from George W. Bush saying that the reason why we have this gasoline problem is, he said, and I quote, "We haven't had an energy strategy for decades. We wouldn't have this problem if 10 years ago we'd had an energy policy." Remember that? Here. Now, for your listening pleasure, July 15th, 1979.
The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation.
These are facts,
and we simply must face them. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never.
Well, unless Ronald Reagan becomes president. Carter also said,
"I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
By the year 2000. If Ronald Reagan hadn't come into office, and his first official act of office was removing the solar panels from the roof of the White House, if this guy hadn't come in with an absolutely criminal energy policy, we would be energy self-sufficient right now. So we'll come back to that in the next hour. Right now it's time for our Best of the Rest of the News segment. We have Christina Bradley with us, also known as Marie Therese, on NewsHounds.us. Their slogan, "We watch Fox, so you don't have to." And Mark Carlin of the editor, what's BuzzFlash.com? Or Mark, do you have a more official title than editor?
Editor and publisher and commander-in-chief.
There you go. Grand poobah. Publisher. That's the word I was looking for. Mark Carlin and Christina Bradley. Welcome to the program, Christina.
Thank you.
And do you prefer to be called Marie Therese on the air?
It's actually Marie Therese, but Chris is fine.
Okay, Chris. Great.
That's fine.
Great. Let's start with you, Mark. What in BuzzFlash.com, I want to start with what are the big stories right now, and then in a few minutes we'll get into what do you see coming down the road. What's popping right now on BuzzFlash?
There's a breaking story that is coming out of Ohio, which is the Northwest Ohio campaign finance chairman for Bush. His home was raided by the FBI last night, seeking evidence that he was illegally funneling money to the Bush campaign in Ohio. And since Ohio was obviously such a pivotal state, this is kind of a very interesting news story that could lead to a lot more. This gentleman, a Mr. No, has been embroiled within a controversy within Ohio because the Republican Party there had used him to invest in a rare coin fund, which is the only state in the union that has investments in a rare coin fund, because he has expertise in this area.
You mean their pension plan is invested in that?
Yes. And so, a part of the pension plan. And so, he's received a little bit of infamous notoriety for that, but there had been indications that there was some potential violations of federal law having to do with the campaign financing of the Bush campaign in Ohio, and the FBI last night raided his house to seize evidence.
Where's Ken Starr when you need him?
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, that's a good one, Mark.
And the second thing I'd say that is probably the most uncovered news story, again, the mainstream press largely ignoring, although the Washington Post had a piece on it, is the Denver Three. These were three people who went to a public presidential event in Denver, went on part of his 60-day Social Security plan that the taxpayers paid for, and they were originally denied entry because a Republican spy, in essence, was stationed in the parking lot and saw that one of them had a bumper sticker that said, "No war in Iraq."
No, it said, "No blood for oil."
No blood for oil, and so they were detained. They were eventually allowed in. But the argument is that they were then pulled out 20 minutes later by someone who allegedly was impersonating a Secret Service officer. Now, just to cut to the chase, what makes this particularly significant is not only that a person may have been impersonating the Secret Service officer and threatened another couple with arrest, a fourth and fifth person, but that the White House is openly now saying that they have a right to keep people that they believe might be thinking about disrupting events from attending them. So this is sort of like that Tom Cruise movie where they're now seeing into people's minds and saying that they have a right to deny people their First Amendment rights based on what they think they might be thinking.
Well, they're at least philosophically consistent, Mark. I mean, now they're saying that the reason why we invaded Iraq was because Saddam Hussein was thinking about weapons of mass destruction.
And remember,
he had the capability, you know,
from a couple years ago where they could see ahead of someone planning to commit murder. And what they're now basically saying is they can see ahead if a person is going to exercise their First Amendment rights, and they want to have the upper hand to stop them from exercising those rights.
Yeah.
And this has happened not just in Denver, but throughout the country. Almost at every stop, they have kept people, including veterans, school teachers, anyone they have suspected of not being a total Bush loyalist, from attending these events. Or in West Virginia, they arrested a couple because they had Gore T-shirts on. And this is a violation of the Constitution of the United States of America.
Yeah, we are becoming a Stalinist state under these guys. Christina Bradley, a.k.a. Marie Therese of www.newshounds.us. Mark's been on the program before, so people are generally familiar with BuzzFlash.com. This is your first time on our program. Why don't you describe just in a sentence or two what NewsHounds.us is all about?
Well, NewsHounds, we grew out of the movie Outfoxed. We were the media monitors that worked with Robert Greenwald on Outfoxed.
Oh, that's great. I know Earl Katz quite well, who had something to do with that movie, and Robert Greenwald's a great guy. These folks do great work.
Right, and when we finished our stint, we just sort of we're talking back and forth via email, like, we want to do something. So the co-producer, Jim Gilliam, suggested we start a blog, which is what we did. And with his able help, we call him our blog father.
Mm-hmm.
He's technical help. We've actually went online on July 1st of last year. And in that time, we're now considered a medium-sized blog. We have had about 500,000 hits, or 500,000. We're doing very well.
Unique users, yeah, that's great. That is wonderful. So you and your slogan, "We watch Fox so you don't have to."
Right.
Thank God. Thank God. I can't imagine. I just can't imagine. I mean, the air traffic control centers, you know, they have those big jars filled with Maalox or Tums or something. Do you have, like, big jars full of Tums or Valium or something around your office?
No.
Or do you just go through a lot of wine?
No, we've had our meltdowns, but no, we have each other. We stay in constant touch via our own email loop.
Yeah.
And our commenters, we have the best readers.
Amazing people.
This has to be a high-stress job. But let's get on to the stories, Christina, with newshounds.us. What are the big stories on your website this week or right now?
Well, you know, we're a little different because we're sort of, we follow what Fox follows, and Fox frequently does not report on the big story.
Right. They're not going to be talking about the Denver Three, who I had on this program an hour ago, by the way. We were interviewing Alex. But in any case, yes, they're not going to be reporting on that. So what,
but I can
what's
tell
up?
You what our readers have been gravitating towards.
Mm-hmm.
Deb wrote a column called Falwell Makes a Threat, which is a threat against John Warner.
The senator from Virginia.
The senator from Virginia who's threatening to veto the nuclear option. And
so Jerry Falwell is inserting himself in politics?
Jerry Falwell, straight out of his hospital bed. Is
becoming a multimillionaire and paying no taxes because he's tax exempt.
Oh, I know.
He doesn't have to pay for the government like the rest of us do, but he certainly thinks that he can have something to say in how it runs. Pardon my editorializing here.
No, that's
finish
fine.
Your story, Christina.
You can editorialize. This is all new to me, so... basically, our readers are generally are very tuned in to the religion thing. When Terry Schiavo came on, we had one of the posts got 1,000 comments.
Yeah.
This is a very hot button issue for our readers, is the separation of church and state. The second one that was the most popular was the fact that Roger Ailes, in an interview with C-SPAN, said that he, you know, Fox loves America. But on Fox News, he really only loves half of America, the half that agrees with him.
Whoa.
That's
his life. I mean, Roger Ailes was a big-time political consultant to Reagan. He makes no bones about the fact that he's a partisan.
Right. But, when he's putting on his public face for C-SPAN, if you saw the interview, you would think Fox was just, you know, fair and balanced.
We're here for America.
Right. You decide.
Right,
you know?
But did he actually say he only loves half America? Or are
he did not say that.
Oh, okay,
that.
So you're inferring that from his behavior.
No, we're talking about the contrast between what we're reporting, which is basically they bash people like you and me. We're pinheads, bomb throwers, elitists, you know, the O'Reilly shtick. You tell us to shut up. We've noticed a pattern which started when we started doing the movie. You have to understand, none of us had watched Fox before we started working with the movie. We went into shock. Within 3 weeks of watching the movie, we were so depressed.
Yeah.
Really, seriously, many of us were thinking of giving it up, and a bunch of people did. We're the ones that stuck in there.
I can imagine.
But a lot of people did not continue.
It's sort of the opposite of the Ed Meese syndrome. You know, Ed Meese was put in charge of Reagan's pornography commission, and so he watched 10 hours of pornographic movies, and he decided that he had to convene a commission, and they had to watch at least 1,000 hours of pornographic movies. So he spent the next 6 months watching porno movies, and we haven't seen him since. You know, he's probably still watching them. So, okay, Christina, what do you see coming on the horizon? What do you see coming up over the next few weeks and months? What are the leading indicators that you're sensing?
For us, for Fox, we think that the filibuster is going to stand. We think that the Democrats have won on that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're feeling. That would be, all of us tend to think that that's what's going to happen because of the tone on Fox seems to, you know.
Because Fox is kind of setting it up.
Hmm?
Fox is setting it up so that the Republicans can declare a victory and go home.
Right, but it'll be, one of our, Chris Herman says, it'll be Fox News will blame the vicious Democrats.
Right, of
course. It will be all our fault. It will be the fault of the progressives, et cetera, et cetera. But they are starting to soft pedal it a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, great. Christina.
Me personally, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm the O'Reilly person, so I actually think Bill O'Reilly's on the way out.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I,
the loofah scandal got to him?
Yes, I think so. That's just guts, just from watching him for so long. He's not getting the big guests.
Yeah.
Hannity's getting the big guests now.
Yeah.
He got Schwarzenegger.
Well, O'Reilly's tanking on the radio. His ratings are in the toilet. In fact, in some markets, they actually have to pay, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars to radio stations to carry his show. So it makes sense. Christina Bradley with NewsHounds.us, thanks for that. Mark Carlin with BuzzFlash.com, the publisher and editor-in-chief. What do you see on the horizon, Mark?
Well, I think the real test is on several issues, whether the Bush juggernaut has been slowed down. The polls, for instance, on the filibuster are so against them that that is the likely reason they will cave. Whether or not that means they will get most of their judicial appointments or not is another question. They probably will because the Democrats have given them most of their judicial appointments.
Sure, 95%. 95% of Bush's nominees have been passed. Only 65% of Clinton's were.
And then we see a complete disaster, at least in polling, on Social Security, for which Bush spent enormous political capital, 60 days of travel around the country, involved in many of these Potemkin Village town hall events that they excluded people who might have been thinking about dissenting, illegally excluding them. And yet he's in the tank on that. And I think that to put it succinctly backfired on them because Frank Luntz, who is, of course, one of their big advisors on how to soft-pedal issues and make them sound positive, I think he didn't realize that when you go up against Social Security, it's like going up against apple pie.
Yeah.
The very idea of messing around with Social Security is like saying we should change the design of the flag. And I think that their own sort of propensity to euphemize everything backfired on them.
Yeah, and
Social Security is sacred. And Bush was trying to mess with something that's sacred.
Right, and their insularity. They only talk to themselves. They, you know, no dissenting opinions here, thank you very much, is their slogan. And I think that that's one of the things that got them.
And the third issue I would say to watch, which again on the polling, they're way on the wrong side of, is Tom DeLay.
Yeah.
That's why we saw some alleged backpedaling in the House, but they're still setting it up to whitewash him.
Yeah, there you go. Tom DeLay going down. The Tom DeLay political death watch on day 11 or 12 here today. Christina Bradley from newshounds.us, Mark Carlin from buzzflash.com. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Keep up the great work, both of you. It's so wonderful to have these great blogs and websites out there that are keeping us informed, keeping America knowing what's really going on in the world. I'm Tom Harbin. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, I'm just a typical American boy from a typical American town. I believe in God and Senator Dodd and I keep an old Castro down. And when it came my time to serve, I knew better dead than red. But when I got to my old draft board, buddy, this is what I said. Sarge, I'm only 18. I got a ruptured spleen and I always carry a purse. I've got eyes like a bat and my feet are flat and my asthma's getting worse.
I remember those days. Yes, indeed. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you for 4 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Hank in Grand Rapids on the line. Hey, Hank, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling the Tom Hartman Show.
Yeah, Tommy, thanks for doing such a good job. Got a easy question for you. I was talking to a diehard Bushy the other day, and we were discussing the spiraling deficit in Iraq and many of the Bush policies. And the guy come back and he says, you know, since Bush has been in office, my taxes have been cut almost 80%.
Does he earn over $1 billion a year?
I says, well, what about, you know, all this other stuff, the deficits? Well, he says, that don't matter to me. He says, as long as I got all this tax cuts, he said, I'm happy. I'm happy living right here in my own little home. He says, all the stuff, the rest of the stuff doesn't even bother me now. I wonder how many people out there actually have this idea. As long as they're living in their own little world, they could care less about the rest of
it. Doesn't matter that Bush is offloading that tax cut onto your, my, his children and our grandchildren. It doesn't bother him that someday, you know, if we live long enough, we'll have to pay it back. I mean, we're paying $160 billion this year on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed back in the mid-'80s to make in 83, 84 to make the economy look good enough that he could get himself reelected. I mean, it doesn't bother him?
No, I don't. And I says, you know, I've been trying to get him over to listen to your show. I says, you know, you need to turn off Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and listen to somebody else. I mean, they're feeding you these lies, and you're not,
You know, you're losing it. You're just like everybody else. And it's like you got to start paying attention and looking out for everybody else.
Yeah, see, I'm all in favor of a rational discussion about where we're going to spend our tax dollars and what our tax rate should be. That's a very important thing. That's what you do in a democracy. You decide what are your priorities. However, we can't have that discussion until we have a balanced budget. Until we have a balanced budget, we're borrowing from the future for everything. And to talk about tax cuts when you're in deficit spending is insane, because it's not possible to talk about tax cuts because you're not actually cutting taxes. What you're doing is you're cutting revenue and you're borrowing more money from your children and grandchildren to give to the rich people, and you're calling it a tax cut. It's not a tax cut. It is a loan from the future to give to the wealthy right now. And it's wrong. It's morally wrong. George Bush doing that is immoral. Hank, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
Day.
And thanks for listening to us there at WTKG in Grand Rapids, Michigan. The day is wrapping up, or this hour is wrapping up. We still have another hour. We're going to get into the clips of the Bush speech.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. This weekend, tomorrow, happy Friday, by the way, this weekend, tomorrow is the anniversary, the 30th anniversary of the official end of the Vietnam War, April 30th, 1975. And Marcus Raskin is a signer of a call to resist illegitimate authority back in 1967 and the co-founder of IPS, the Institute for Policy Studies. Marcus, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
I'm very pleased to have you with us. You were a key player in the anti-war movement in the 60s. You and four co-authors published this document, A Call to Resist Illegitimate Authority, calling the government's draft for the Vietnam War illegal. You worked with Ben Spock, Dr. Spock, and were arrested by federal officials charged with advocating resistance to the military draft. Found guilty? Was it a crime to advocate resistance to the draft?
It's a little bit more complicated than that.
Okay.
The government basically lost the case. I was acquitted at the jury level, and two others, Spock and Ferber, were acquitted at the Court of Appeals, and the other two, the government decided not to bring charges after the case was reversed and remanded. So, in effect, this was a victory for both the peace movement and for free speech.
Although, no doubt, you spent an enormous amount of time, money, and effort defending yourself against these charges.
A very great deal of time and effort was spent doing this. And in cases like that, they have a very profound effect on families as well. In that particular case, and you can imagine these were people both very well known and very well off. Every one of the families in that case, where there were marriages, the people ended up getting divorced. And also, the fifth person, who is quite young, was engaged, and that engagement was broken off. Now, you can argue that was as a result of what the people on trial wanted, or trauma, or whatever, but that was the result. And the other part of that is you can imagine what this is like for poor families when they don't have the leading talent legally in the country to argue the case, or the support literally of millions of people as we did, where they're alone, where they're poor, and they've got nothing going for them in terms of support.
Yeah.
It must be absolute hell.
Yeah, I can imagine, and it's an ongoing thing. I mean, here we have the Bush administration, just now they don't even bother to prosecute. They just arrest people and they vanish. We're just like Argentina. I mean, we've got, they won't even tell us if the two, you know, Jose Padilla and I'm forgetting the other guy's name, the two American citizens who have been illegally detained, or they say legally, detained without access to lawyers, without access to courts, if they're the only two. They won't even tell us that. But right. But let's get into the war in Iraq. The news release here I have has as a header the logic of withdrawal, Iraq. What are the parallels you see between Iraq and Vietnam, and when do you think it's time for us to declare victory and go home?
It would have been time to declare victory and go home before the war began.
Right.
And if you were being politic about it, if you were insisting on going to war, which, by the way, is an aggressive war, you probably could have done so without any problem after Saddam Hussein was toppled. The important point about this, though, goes back to this notion about whether or not the United States, on its own authority, is able to make aggressive war. The fact that it's...
Or any country, for that matter.
On any country, exactly.
Not just on any country, whether any country has the right to make an aggressive war.
Exactly.
I mean, the last world leader to make that argument of a major nation was Hitler.
Right. And the point about this is that the whole UN Charter is predicated on the idea of non-making of aggressive war, that war itself is an excrescence, and that it had to, at the very least, be something which was legal. Now,
war is a defensive last step. It's the final.
Exactly.
It's after all other options are exhausted. It is the final option, and it is
only in a defensive way.
Right.
And even in that case, you have to bring it as quickly as possible to the UN Security Council. Well, in this case, the government, I think, intentionally lied about the war, the United States government, and went ahead on its own authority under the theory that the United States was the single superpower left, and what we were going to do is to show how we could perform a kind of blitzkrieg, a shock and awe war,
right,
to do very well, and that would then serve as proof of our credibility in other parts of the world.
Right.
So this whole thing...
It's the same rationale that Truman used to drop the bomb in Japan to cause the Soviets to back away from us.
Right.
Second bomb, anyway.
Right. So there's there's all of that underneath the story. And the major part of this is that we've been doing business this way for some 60 years, and as we point out in our new book, In Democracy's Shadow, we've reorganized the state, the national security state, using democracy as a fig leaf, but organizing it in terms of continuous small wars, and when mistakes are made, larger wars. And in order to do that, there has to be transformation of the entire state apparatus in this country, which is what began happening during the Second World War and has continued to this day and will continue thereafter. And what we're caught
How with, so, Marcus Raskin?
Well, you have an expansion of the Department of Defense. You have an expansion of the CIA. You have an expansion of the FBI.
So this is what you're saying is going to continue on?
This is, at this point, I don't see any way around this.
Yeah.
Unless there are certain legal steps to be taken. One is impeachment and conviction, which would then begin to stop this sort of activity. But right now, all government officials have a free ride, and the consciousness of the country is such as to be willing to accept this and to accept the propaganda and the self.
So how do we change this, Marcus? Marcus Raskin, how do we change this?
Well, there are, I wish I could tell you and your audience, but there are three things that have to be done. In the Vietnam War, what was absolutely crucial was that in different sectors of American life, finally what happened was that people got it and they began coalescing together, and literally hundreds of thousands of people going to the streets and saying no more.
Right.
But even in that case, which began happening by 1967. That is, the numbers of people on the against the war and making their weight felt. It still took until 1975 for the war to stop. Here, the problem is worse. In Vietnam, there was very little reason that, except an abstract reason for going to war. Here, there are real reasons, and that is from an American geopolitical perspective. There's oil, and the United States, this goes to the second point, unless American society is prepared to change its lifestyle and to decrease the amount of oil and energy and so forth that it uses, this will go on.
As Jimmy Carter suggested back in 79. On July 15th, Jimmy Carter declared, from this day forward, the United States will not consume 1 gallon more of imported oil than we consumed in 1997, 2 years earlier. And he said, that's it. We're putting an end to it. We're going to create a solar bank. We're going to have 20% of our nation's power generated by solar electricity by the year 2000. We're going to wean ourselves off of foreign oil. That's the end of it. And we had this marvelous opportunity. And
exactly.
Reagan came in and said, well, you know, I came into power with all this money from the oil industry, so,
right. So
that's the end of that.
So the lifestyle question, the power of the oil companies and other corporations that are linked to them are not for such a direction.
Right.
So we're going to play, I'm afraid we're going to play this out to our disaster. And the third thing is, again, a question around the use of law and morality. The use of law is to look at certain contradictions. That Clinton was impeached and then almost convicted in the Senate for his sexual peccadilloes, and that this administration and this president is able to commit the United States to war on the basis of lies suggests that there's something very, very basically wrong in the political structure in the Democratic and Republican Party. And that has to be corrected in order to change.
Don't you think that may also suggest that there's something seriously wrong with the media in the United States?
The media is, of course, a crucial piece to this story. And the media, for the most part, I don't want to overstate this, but for the most part, is a palace court media.
Last night after Bush's speech, I tune in Chris Matthews on MSNBC. He's very, very popular, you know, on the cable channels. He's
right.
Up and coming, as it were. And who did he have on? Did he have on a Democrat and a Republican? No, he had on David Frum, who is the former speechwriter for George W. Bush.
Right.
And he had on Joe Scarborough, who is the former right-wing congressman, good buddy of Newt Gingrich, toxic conservative who has his own TV show on MSNBC. No liberals in sight. No progressives in sight. Not even any Democrats. Not even a DLC Democrat in sight. You've got a right-winger and an extreme right-winger.
Well, that's right. And the point about this really goes further, that I think that rather the news, and Matthews is not the worst by any means.
No, I mean, here you've got Brian Williams, the new guy at NBC, who says that he thinks it's part of his responsibility as an American citizen to listen to Rush Limbaugh every day.
Right. So that is a situation that we now face. Now,
yeah.
What's interesting...
We have about 20 seconds left, Marcus. We've got to wrap this up.
Good. The national security state at least has a notion of prudent imperialism. This government, presently, in this administration, believes in triumphal nationalism. And that's a profound quantum leap away from the Cold War.
Right. That is, now we're going back into the realm that, of Hitler and Mussolini and going back to Bonaparte and the Caesars. I mean, this is absolutely wrong. Marcus, is there a website where people can get more information about you and the work you're doing?
Yeah, M. Raskin.
M-R-A-S-K-I-N.
Yeah, at IGC. .org.
Okay, that's your email address.
Right.
Okay. No, but not a website.
No.
Okay. Marcus, thanks so much for being with us. I do appreciate it. It's
right.
A Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, are these the last dying gasps of the Bush Empire as politically they sink into the sunset? Or was it an opportunity for George W. to get out there and rouse the troops and get all kinds of support from his Republican colleagues? Let's ask Ellen Ratner on the Talk Radio News Service, our Washington, D.C. bureau chief. Hey, Ellen.
Well, hi. I'm sure the Family Research Council wasn't too excited because he talked about religion as being personal. And as you know, they said you can't be a Democrat and not support the nuclear option.
You mean a Republican?
The filibuster.
You can't be a Republican.
Did I say? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Republican. That's
yeah.
Right. So I think that is, you know, he really moved away from his base a little bit yesterday in that comment.
Just a little bit? I mean, these guys spent 3 weeks pumping this thing up to a screaming crescendo. Bill Frisco's on this program. You got Bill Donahue on there going, what do these people think? We're the American Taliban? And all over America, middle America is going, looks like the American Taliban to me.
Right. Well, exactly. And his numbers at the overnight polls just were disastrous.
Yeah. Now, after his press conference?
After his, yes. They did AOL did a poll and somebody else did a poll. But, I mean, AOL was, a scientific poll, not just who showed up on their website.
Right.
And his numbers went down after the press conference immediately. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean a whole heck of a lot, but it didn't hit it out of the park like the White House communications team wanted it to.
Yeah, and they did their best Frank Luntz work on it. I mean, they were using all the hot words, all the hot buttons. He was so good at it.
Well, he certainly knows how to use language, and he uses language at very much a developmental level of what some people would call a Jane Lovinger 2-3 stage. I'm actually writing a paper just about that entire issue of how he uses language at a very different developmental level than Kerry did.
Yes, and in fact, that was my problem with Kerry. Kerry would get into one of these things. Even with Social Security, Kerry will talk about solvency. I don't think 80% of Americans understand what you mean when you say solvency.
Not a word.
And
not a
Kerry
word.
Was constantly using inside language, and I just wanted to scream, Kerry, talk plain, please. But anyhow, that's another election and another debate.
Water over the dam. Let
there
me
you go.
Tell you a little bit about Mr. Bolton. It looks like there is yet another issue with Bolton. It looks like in 2002, there was, in fact, a question about a missile strike in downtown Gaza and whether Israel violated laws that an F-16 jet had actually been used, which violated the American sort of rules of engagement for Israel.
Right.
Well, apparently, the State Department prepared a memo with both Bolton's views on it and the legality of some analysts at the State Department. Somehow, the both views memo disappeared, and only Bolton's reappeared, and apparently some people at the State Department then stayed till 11:12 at night to make sure that Bolton could not switch things. And so now there are various members of the committee that are taking a look at what Bolton did with that as well.
John Bolton cooks the books again.
Can you believe that?
I can easily believe that, Ellen.
Well, what's unbelievable is how do you put somebody and not do the background check on this stuff?
Well,
they talk to your next door neighbor on how you take out the garbage, but do they ever bother to talk to your underlings?
Well, these are the same people who proposed Bernie Kerik, keep in mind.
Right. That's very true. I mean, the vetting.
To be the top cop in America. The top cop in America. Yeah, their vetting is like everything else. It's like if you're loyal. This is all about single-party rule. It's not about competence. It's not about putting the right people in place. It's about single-party rule. This is a Stalinist administration. Time to start using the S-word.
Well, you know something? It's interesting. Loyalty with the Bushes is, as you know, the price of loyalty is the most important thing.
Yeah, it's the coin of the realm in the Bush administration. Ellen Ratner, the Talk Radio News Service, our Washington, D.C. bureau chief. Thank you so much, Ellen, for calling in today with your report. Keep up the great work, and we will talk to you on Monday. Have a wonderful weekend. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the true people's radio, the place where smart people get their news.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Have you ever got a note from your bank saying,
"Greetings, your account just shrank by 25 or 30 bucks. Sorry, friend, you're out of luck. You bounced a check. That's what it was. It happens to the best of us. Please cover it quick."
And when you do, you find you got another one or two. 'Cause what they done, I never seen it fail. They notified you by the U.S. mail. Cost them almost 40 cents, but more than worth that little expense. 'Cause by the time you receive that letter, their situation got even better. Your first overdraft cost a couple more. Now you own the pile of money for sure.
They hope you never wonder in your little head why they don't send you an email instead. A quicker way and cheaper, too, for them as well as the customer, you.
Or an automated call to your phone or pager would be an improvement vastly major, but they'd lose all those overdraft fees they charge you. A profit center very large. See, that's what they call it. The banks charge you two or three times and then say,
"Thanks for making us rich at your expense. Thank God you haven't got the sense to ask us, please, won't you install the software that'll place a call or send..."
Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Another great piece of music from Jim Turr over at BlueCanyonSatire.com. Remarkable. The George W. Bush Roadshow was rolling along last night. As you may have noticed here, George W.
proposed a Social Security system in the future where benefits for low-income workers will grow faster than benefits for people who are better off.
Now, this is code. Benefits for low-income workers will grow faster than benefits for people who are more well-off. What that means is that if you earn over $30,000 a year, if you earn over $30,000, well, actually, I think $20,000 was the cutoff, as I recall. We haven't seen, I don't have the exact specifics. I mean, the Bush administration has not laid this out in detail. He's not, we're about as close as we can get to a proposal here. But basically, if you make above poverty, $20,000 more or less a year, then your Social Security will go up. Although it won't go up as fast as it's going now, it won't keep up with the cost. It won't keep up with your wages. That is your retirement benefits. So when you retire, you'll see less money. But in addition to that, if you earn $36,000 a year, the average wage in America. If you're 17 years old now and you retire in 2055 at the age of 67 and you earn $36,000 a year right now, you will see a 20% cut in your benefits under the program, broadly under the program that Bush proposed last night. If you're earning $59,000 a year, you'll see a 30% reduction in your Social Security benefits under George's program. And people who earn the equivalent of $90,000 a year and more would have a reduction of almost 40% when they retire in 2055. Now, are these the numbers from some wild-eyed left-wing think tank? No. They are calculations made by Stephen C. Goss, the nonpartisan chief actuary for the Social Security Administration. Yes, you heard it. The Social Security Administration. Have you been catching all of Bush's lies on this stuff? This is absolutely incredible. Here's his lie where he talks about the Social Security is going to go into the red. Well, of course, we have this trust fund. There's really two parts to Social Security. There's the pay-as-you-go part, that is, historically, from its founding in 1937 up until 1982, Social Security brought in money, it spent money. Every year, it spent what it brought in. It had a checking account to do it, of course. You have to have a checking account if you're going to write checks. That's common sense. That's a little beyond Bush as well. But then in 1982, the demographers, the people who look at demographics and population variables and say, they said, "Hey, you know, it looks like there is a bunch of baby boomers coming down the road, and these baby boomers are all going to retire at the same time, and when they do, we're not going to be able to afford to pay for it all on a pay-as-you-go basis without raising Social Security taxes up to 30%. We can't do that. So let's start saving money. Let's have a 30-year period where we save money from the baby boomers. We'll take that money from them and then give it back to them when they retire. And then after they're all dead in 2070, we can actually probably reduce the Social Security payments. Reduce the Social Security tax. Because there will be fewer people retired.
It's the rabbit going through the python thing. You've got this bulge. You have to deal with the bulge. So in 1982, under the stewardship of Ronald Reagan, Alan Greenspan and Daniel Patrick Moynihan were headed up this commission, and they said, okay, what we need to do is we need to crank up the Social Security tax so that we can create a savings account so that we can save that money from the baby boomers between 82 and 2017. We're going to take a 35-year period, and we're going to take extra money out of their paychecks so that when they retire, we can pay them their retirements. And that's what we've been doing. That's the Social Security Trust Fund. That is separate from the mainstream of cash going through Social Security. Right now, all of the money that comes into Social Security is split into two parts. Part of it goes into the trust fund where it's saved. It's right now invested in government treasury bills because the government has been borrowing it from us. We have been borrowing it from us. George W. has borrowed from the Social Security Trust Fund about $200 billion a year so that he can claim that his deficits are lower than they are and so that he can take that borrowed money and give it to his cronies as tax, as what he calls tax cuts. So there's that. It's this money coming into Social Security gets split into two. Part of it goes into the trust fund, which is the savings account for the baby boomers, and part of it is used to pay current retirees. And that second part that pays current retirees is what historically has been Social Security. All of it. So you've got these two things, right? Got it? And when the baby boomers are all dead, we're going to go back to one thing, like we started out, which is pay as you go. The money comes in, the money goes out. So you understand that. Now, the reality is that in 82, when they said, okay, if we take extra money out of people's paychecks from now until 2017 or beyond, then that money will accumulate into a trust fund to be enough to more than pay back or more than pay the baby boomers for their retirements. And isn't that a great thing? So we've got all this extra cash. And their assumptions were based on the assumption that the economy was actually going to be strong from 2082 until 2017. And instead, what we had was voodoo economics, crank conservative Reaganomics that threw us into a recession. And George W. Bush, the same problem. Clinton popped us out of it a little bit, but then George W. came, or George Herbert Walker Bush, the same problem. And then George W. Bush came along and went back to Reaganomics, back to trickle-down economics, back to deficit spending, back to borrow and spend. So now that we have a $7 trillion debt instead of the $3 trillion debt Ronald Reagan left us, it's even worse. The economy on the edge of going in the tank because of the insanity of the conservative behavior. And as a result of this, the payroll taxes have been lower because they've declared war on the middle class. The middle class are not making as much money as Moynihan and Greenspan thought they would back in 82. So there's not as much money in the Social Security Trust Fund. You can solve that problem very, very easily one of two ways. One, raise the minimum wage by $2 or $3 an hour. You will see an absolute economic boom all across the United States. Why? Because our economy is demand-driven. It is not supply-driven. People don't run out and buy something simply because it's available. If somebody opened a store down the street from me that was selling Indian musical instruments, I'm not going to run out and buy one just because they're there. That's not how entrepreneurs think. Entrepreneurs look around and they don't say, hey, I like... llamas. So I'm going to set up a llama farm and start selling llamas. That's not how it works. What you do is you look around and you say, what's their demand for? What is it that people want to buy? What are people willing to spend money on? And then you create a business to offer that, to fulfill that demand, to meet that demand. Well, the simple and unfortunate reality is Bushonomics is based on the belief that if you give wealthy people money, they will start factories to sell things, whether or not they know that people want to buy them. And that's not how the real world works. But if you put money in the hands of people who spend virtually all the money that they receive, which is the working class in America, we have a savings rate of under 2%. If you put money in the hands of the people who spend all the money that they receive, they will go out and spend that money and you will have an economic boom. They will create demand. And then the entrepreneurs and business people will step in and fill that demand. But the Bushies, I mean, this is beyond them. So anyhow, here's Bush's big lie. It's got two big lies embedded in one. This is a twofer, friends. Number one, him saying, oh, there's no checking account for Social Security. Of course there is. Number two, him saying it's going to go bankrupt in 2041. No, it's not going to go bankrupt. The trust fund, that extra savings account for the boomers, is going to run out of money. It really needs to run out of money about 15 years later when all the boomers are finally dead, 20 years later. And so we just need to extend it a little bit. In fact, once the trust fund is entirely gone, Social Security can continue to pay 70% of all benefits. So it's just a fine-tuning problem. But here it is. A twofer. Two big lies in one quote, George W. Bush.
These changes have put Social Security on the path to bankruptcy. When the baby boomers start retiring in 3 years, Social Security will start heading toward the red. In 2017, the system will start paying out more in benefits than it collects
as
in payroll
supposed
taxes.
To.
Every year after that, the shortfall will get worse, and by 2041, Social Security will be bankrupt.
No, it won't. The trust fund will be gone in 2041 or 2051, depending on whose numbers you look at. It's incredible. When these guys put together their math for Social Security on how Social Security is going to play out on the private accounts, they assume that the economy is going to continue to grow at 5%. Well, if the economy continued to grow at 5% from now into the distant future, there would be no Social Security crisis. None. The increase in payroll would increase the Social Security tax revenues, and Social Security will be solvent forever if the economy grew at 5% a year. And yet when they make their projections about, well, here's how much your personal account will pay you, they're assuming 5% economic growth. And then when they make their assumptions about how we're going to be in trouble, it's going to go bankrupt in 2042 or 2041, they use a 3% assumption of economic growth. Well, if you put a 3% assumption of economic growth on the private accounts, people get screwed. I'm ranting. Let's go to the telephone lines. Hear what you have to say. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number here at 1144 in the Pacific. What would that be? 1-2-230-244 in the East Coast. And everything in between. It's 44 minutes past the hour. G. Edward is on the line in Pennsylvania. Or G. Edwards. Hey, G.
Hello. Hi, Tom. I've been sending you some papers and stuff, but I don't know if you got them. I think they went to your old address. About a wave generator?
You mean a power source?
A power source.
Yeah, I've received some things about that.
Well, I received a patent pending status, international, and...
Congratulations.
I wanted to release this onto your website, because you have a lot of engineers, professors, that'll click into this and see this and understand this right away.
Well, feel free. You can go into our message board and post any public message you want, and as long as it's not obscene or a threat against the president, it'll stand.
It's linked right on my website.
Yeah.
So they
Great.
Can link right to it.
Great.
At gedwardcook.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just click wave power generator, and they can
Great.
Start looking at it and bring feedback to you. This
okay.
will produce so much power, it could end the problem of energy through capitalism.
Well, that's great, G. Edward, and you've given yourself a nice commercial here on a nationally syndicated program. Congratulations. 14 minutes before the hour, Sean in Indiana on the line. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Hey, Tom, there's one thing you're forgetting about all of this, is that George W. Bush doesn't care about what happens in 30 years because he thinks the end of the world's going to happen anytime now.
That's right. The rapture's going to come and we'll all be dead. It's just like they found, they now discovered that they could drill into ice cores in Antarctica that are so old, you know, 90,000-year-old ice cores that are just incredibly clean and pure, and they parse them out. And they prove that global warming is not only happening, but is happening at a worse and more rapid rate than anybody had imagined. And the response from the Bush crowd, come on, the world was created 6,000 years ago. We don't believe those things are 90,000 years old.
Well, I got in on the show late, so sorry if you mentioned this, but there's one thing that the media is completely not reporting, is did you know that Tuesday, George W. Bush signed he just signed this, that it is illegal to bring a recording device in a movie theater. Not recording it, but bringing it in the theater up to punishable up to 3 years in federal prison.
Whoa.
It's a federal offense now.
Whoa.
That bill got signed.
I had no idea. So now you can be thrown into prison for having the potential of committing an economic crime.
Yes, because cell phones have hard drives now, don't you know? And you know, the quality...
So now, if you have a cell phone that has a camera built into it with a hard drive on it, one of these new ones that they're putting out to compete with iPods, and you walk into a theater, you can go to prison for 3 years.
Yeah. Well, up to 3 years.
Incredible.
That's assuming you're not a terrorist.
Yeah, this is the equivalent of saying that if you walk into a 7-Eleven with a jackknife in your pocket, which could be used to perpetrate a bank robbery or a 7-Eleven robbery, you have to go to jail because you had the ability, you had the potential to rob them.
Yep, completely. I mean, this went right under everybody's radar.
Boy, it sure went under mine.
Yeah, well, thank God for the hackers of the universe. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, all right, I just want to let you guys know that because that's just...
Thanks for sharing that with us, Sean. Sean, if you've got something printed on that, email it to me, would you? And I'll blog it a little on the air next week.
Yeah, I sure will.
Okay, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Boy, and I thought I was well-informed. It's amazing. Xavier in Santa Cruz on the line. Hey, Xavier, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. Yeah, I wanted to comment on Social Security. But first, the caller before this one, last one, talking about that wave thing. I do research on fuel cells and stuff like that, so I'd be interested in looking into this.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm not interested, and I said post it on my website and people can go find it. But then when he got into the, and here's what it'll do, it was like, okay, you know, this is commercial radio. If you want to buy a spot, that's fine. We have a half a minute, Xavier. What's up?
Yeah. Well, just Social Security. I was thinking that, you know, the baby boomers, if they were paying in at the normal rate, I would think that that would create a surplus of funds, and any extra increment that they paid would.
What do you mean by normal rate?
Well, I mean if you've got a certain number of people going through the pipe, and then all of a sudden a bigger number goes through, they're paying more.
We are actually. I mean, I'm one of the baby boomers. The baby boomers are paying more. In fact, that was the whole point. They raised the tax from 8% more or less to 11% more or less in 1982.
I don't think they even needed to do that. So there should be an extra surplus, is my point.
Well, yeah, ideally you would think so. And frankly, I'm not enough of an actuary to know why that's not the case. But thanks for bringing that up, Xavier. I appreciate it. It's Tom Hartman.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Yes, and that train is called an election. And if you want that election to have any consequence at all in 2006, the time to get politically active is right now. Join Democracy for America, democracyforamerica.com. Join the Democratic Party. I don't know that. I think it's democrats.org is their website. Progressive Democrats of America, pdamerica.org. Join the Republican Party, rnc.org. Join a political party, get active, infiltrate, become an activist from within. Change this nation by participating. Alan in Dallas is on the line. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program. Alan, listen to your phone, not your radio. Alan? Okay. I think maybe Alan took a bathroom break. I'm going to put Alan on hold here. We'll come back to him in just a minute and see if he's still around. In the meantime, let's hear from George W. Bush.
These changes have put Social Security on the path to bankruptcy.
Oh, that's the same one we've already heard. Let's close that out. Here's another one.
Now, it's very important for our fellow citizens to understand there's not a bank account here in Washington, D.C., where we take your payroll taxes and hold it for you.
Oh, yes, there is.
And then give it back to you when you retire.
Sure
our system
is.
It's called pay as you go.
Well, part of it.
You pay into the system through your payroll taxes, and the government spends it. It spends the money on the current retirees, and with the money left over, it funds other government programs. And all this.
Only if you steal it.
Is file cabinets full of IOUs.
IOUs, yes. They're called Treasury bills! Another two, that was a three for three lies in one. Let's go back to Alan, see if he's with us now. Hey, Alan.
Tom, I found out that my great-grandfather used to let union members see at his store right out of Birmingham, Alabama.
Uh-huh.
Speaking while they were eating.
Good on him. Alan, we have lost the signal, though. The first time you were gone, now you're really gone. We've lost your signal. I'm sorry. There's no signal there. But I salute your grandfather for letting union members meet in his store. That's a fine thing. Let's hear another Bush lie. You know, how do you know the Bush is lying? His lips are moving. Here's another Bush lie for you.
I like to say this. If it's good enough for the Congress, it is it ought to be good enough for the workers.
Well, actually, instead of calling that a Bush lie, let's call that a Bush distraction, because he doesn't really mean it. If he really meant that what's good enough for the Congress is good enough for the workers, he'd be advocating national health care. Every member of Congress has free health insurance. Why don't you and I? Every other industrialized country in the world has it. Well, we've got to protect the profits of the insurance industry. Why should we even have an insurance industry? Why? You wouldn't want all those people unemployed, would you? I'm sure they'd find something to do, especially if you were to change your trade policies, Mr. Bush, so that you weren't exporting jobs all over the world. We could have a boom in this United States. You want to see a true economic boom? I mean, a huge, true economic boom? Promote alternative energy. The solar energy industry exploded under Jimmy Carter. The wind power industry was birthed. Right now, you can build a wind power plant for a city, for a state. You can build a wind power plant, and it's more economically efficient and more viable than a nuclear plant, a coal-fired plant, or an oil-fired plant, given the current cost of oil. Well, nuclear shouldn't be affected by that. Yes, it is. It takes oil to mine uranium. So get with the program, Mr. Bush, please. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks for being with us this week. And thanks to Louise for producing the program, to the folks in our chat room, to the folks streaming our program, Shelby at radiopower.org, Ben at whiterosesociety.org, Christine over at American FM. Thanks to the folks at CRN Digital. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to our sponsors. We'll see you on Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.